Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery, and that is why the Machinery Digest exists, a no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello and welcome to Idle Chatter. I'm your host, Ray Bohax, from the Farm Machinery Digest website. I hope the sound of my voice today has everything going well on your farm or ranch, and that you are looking forward to the harvest season, which for many will be right around the bend, and for others it may not be for another couple of months yet. So you may have time to go to the Farm Progress Show. Sadly, I have never been there. It always coincides with our sweet corn harvest. And I actually was invited by Firestone to come and be at their booth, but I had to decline because, like I said, it always comes that time of year when our sweet corn harvest is due, and farming comes first, right? So we all know what that is about. For those that are going to the Farm Progress, then I suggest stop by and see the good folks over at Firestone Ag. I understand from their newsletter, they have a great newsletter that I get. Anyone could get it. I do have to find out how you apply for it, though, or how do you subscribe to it. I'm unprepared to tell you about that now. But they have a great newsletter that goes out and gives you a lot of facts about tires in general and how to use your tires efficiently on the farm. But I know that they have some interesting things going on at their booth. And the stop by, Brad Harris is going to be there. And he is a great guy. I've worked with him over the past few years. He actually farms with his parents or his father in Ohio. And he is one of the lead engineers on that Firestone Ag. He's a dirt under your fingernails, grease under your fingernails farmer engineer. And I know that he'll be there along with some other great folks. So stop by and check out their new tire, the Evo tire. And also talk to them about if you got a track machine and it's getting up there in hours, talk to them about their replacement tracks. And wish I was going to be there to see that show. Great show, from what I understand. And just sadly, always miss it. When I was a younger guy and I was really into drag racing, it was my dream to go to the Indy Nationals. And that was probably the largest NHRA drag race of the year. And it always happened, I think it was Labor Day weekend, and we were always right in the midst of our harvest. So that is another event that I never had the opportunity to go to. And at this particular point, I've lost interest in going to it. I'm really not that much into I love drag racing. I loved it years ago. It got like so many sports and so many motorsports got totally out of control. Years back, the guys came and they built the engines, they drove the cars, they drove the trucks there. They weren't coming with these $2 million rigs, and they were just ground-up guys and racers and engine builders. And today, they buy the engine, they lease the engine, somebody else builds the car, somebody drives the truck, somebody drives the car. The guy who drives the car doesn't even know what kind of engine is in it, and he just knows he's a real good driver. They call him a shoe, and totally lost interest in it, just like with NASCAR. I know there may be a lot of NASCAR fans out there, so maybe stepping on some toes, but it's not the same as it was years ago with Smokey Unick and all those other guys, and the Yarboroughs and Richard Petty and family, a bunch of farmers building, building race cars. Today it's all this corporate body style. They have some kind of generic body and they put a decal on it and it says Toyota, it says Ford, it says Chevy, it says Dodge, and they all look the same. They change the decal on the headlights. So not for me, thank you. But what I did want to tell you about, which I think that you would find of great interest, that has nothing to do with technology or engines or machinery, is that the group, the Farmers and Ranchers Alliance, just recently put out a wonderful, wonderful video. It's about a 5-minute long video. It's based on a true story. And it's it tells the story of the plight of many people today in agriculture, and how I don't want to give away the meat of it, but it's called 30 Harvests. So if you have an opportunity, go to Farmers and Ranchers Alliance, and then go to their website and download the movie 30 Harvests. And it's, as I said, it's about a family. I guess I could give you some of the punchline, that decides to pack it in and sell the farm, and then has a change of heart. But it's an emotional story. It's exquisitely filmed. It's exquisitely done. It has no actors in it. It's the real people in it, and they. It tells the story of what so many are suffering today, but how we need to just hang in there, right? We need to hang in there and keep our eyes focused on our goal of being a farmer and feeding the world. So check that out. It's on at the Farmers and Ranchers Alliance website, and it's called 30 Harvest. Alrighty, so today's show is going to be about hydraulic motors, and that's something that are used throughout the farm, specifically in machinery. There may be some other applications of a hydraulic motor, maybe operating some sort of conveyor system or auger system, what have you, but usually it's not, but there could be. That's one thing that you learn in technical writing. Never say that there isn't or there is, because somebody will always tell you, well, back in 1942, this company built this, and they had an auger, and they used a hydraulic motor. But anyway, hydraulic motors are found throughout farm equipment. They're often used for drive systems on machinery, like a tractor or a combine or a skid steer. And they're used for other things also on the farm and in machinery. So I think it's time that we got to discuss a little bit about hydraulic motors and have you, and hopefully give you a good understanding of them, a good basic understanding. And we do have a special delivery. A few letters came in with almost the same subject, and I had discussed this once before, but I guess it bears repeating. And I had a couple of people contact me in the past week that were suffering the wrath on a diesel engine of fuel dilution in the oil. And so I will collectively answer those without giving the people's names, because I did have a number of them come in, and that seems to be that time of year. Not that there is any special time of year for diesel fuel in the oil, but it seems that everything seems to come in bunches, right? That you get a whole bunch of letters or questions about the same thing. So we will discuss that at the end of the show, and that is compliments of Firestone Ag. As I was saying a couple of minutes ago, there's probably, once you start to think about it, there's probably, you don't have to look too far or too hard to find hydraulic motors someplace in your farm operation. It could be a hydrostatic drive unit on a combine or a sprayer, or even a hydrostatic drive on a lawn tractor. I have a John Deere D110 that we bought new in 2017. And it is my first lawn tractor with a hydrostatic drive. And also on the farm here, we don't have a hydrostatic drive. We have a gear drive tractor. My New Holland is a gear drive. But anyway, I always had gear drive lawn tractors, and we keep them forever. The first lawn tractor that we had on the Bohacks farm was in 1986. It was a leftover 1985 John Deere I think it wasn't a 110. I forgot what the number is, sadly. Great, great track. That had a two-cylinder Briggs & Stratton, was gear drive, had electric PTO for the mower deck. I think it was a 38-inch deck. It's sad because, you know, when I was younger, I remember all that stuff, and now I guess as time goes by, then you have more equipment and more numbers in your head that you forget. But bought it brand new. It was a leftover. Got it Memorial Day weekend, 1986. Yeah, 1985 leftover, made in Horicon, Wisconsin, at the John Deere plant there, which I understand does not make lawn tractors anymore, because mine is made down, the new one is made down in Tennessee. And that was a gear drive tractor. It was bulletproof. It lasted us for many, many, many years. So it was 1986. I replaced it in 2009, excuse me. So that was quite old. It was still running great, that Briggs & Stratton motor, but you couldn't get parts for it anymore. Everything that John Deere had for it, you could get, but it was a retrofit. So it was a nightmare, because it went very quickly from being a repair to a restoration. I remember the PTO, the electric PTO clutch went out, and then I bought one from John Deere, and it was a retrofit. You had to cut a keyway, and you had to file this, and you had to cut the wire, and the plug was different, and solder the new connection on, and lengthen the wires. It was just a nightmare. And then what had happened, my dad was dying at the time, and I just wanted to get a tractor. Didn't want to spend a lot of money to keep the grass cut. And so I went to Tractor Supply. I don't know if you guys have that. It's almost like a Rural King, if you don't know Tractor Supply. It's basically in the same likes of it. And I bought another gear drive lawn tractor. This was a Husky, made by MTD. It had a Briggs engine also, and it was a $800, $900 tractor, 42-inch cut. And the motor, I loved the motor, was fantastic. The belt drive and the pulley drive for the mower deck was left a little bit to be desired. The hubs wore out. The mower spindle hubs wore out a couple of times, and the belts wouldn't last. But as far as the motor was concerned, the engine was concerned, that thing was a sweetheart. And then in 2017, I'm giving you this chronology like it's my life story, right, with lawn tractors, I bought a new John Deere D110, which had a hydrostatic transmission. And that brings you, of course, we're talking about hydraulic pumps today, right? So, and I love that tractor. I cannot believe how that hydrostatic transmission decreased my mowing time here. And I actually, just around my house, I decreased my mowing time by, I'd say, a good third, if not more, maybe 40%. So I could do everything by the house here probably about 40-42 minutes, where it used to take me an hour and a half with the gear drive tractor. So that hydraulic system really brought some value. And then your other places, you'll see, like on a big mower, like a Batwing mower, you may have hydraulic, you'll have hydraulic motors running the cutting blades. So they're found every place on the farm. So let's start with a little engineering background, right? So you can understand. A hydraulic motor, regardless of what it's used for, offers many advantages over other types of drive systems. And that could be a belt drive, electric drive, what have you. It could be a direct drive, PTO drive. But, you know, because one of the main advantages of a hydraulic motor is that it can be designed to develop or deliver, is probably a better term, nearly full torque on startup. So that means it has a very high power density for its physical size, and it has a major reduction in shock load. And what we mean by shock load is that if you hit something with it, it has an ability to absorb that shock, because it's working with fluid, and the fluid actually works like a shock absorber. So if you were let's say mowing with a large mower in the field, and you hit a rock or a stump or something, you'd have a better chance of not breaking something with a hydraulic motor than you would with a gear drive. And I actually did break the gearbox once on my New Holland rotary cutter. I was one more pass, right? It was getting dark, and you know how you always know where the rocks are in the field? It's amazing how you know where everything is in the field. They said, man, there's a rock sticking up out of the ground here, but I think I just could skate around it, and it was dark, and boom, I hit it perfectly, and I busted the gearbox. That was about 10 years ago in the mower. So if the system was running a hydraulic motor, there's a very good possibility that I would not have done that level of damage of busting the whole gearbox. And another plus of hydraulic motors is a minimum amount of maintenance and service. So on engineering side, that is why there are hydraulic motors in use in so many applications. But when you really look at the tenet, the basics of a hydraulic motor, you could convince yourself it's almost like a starter generator, right? You could convince yourself, is it a motor or is it a pump? And there's not much physical difference between, if you look at the external design of a hydraulic motor or a hydraulic pump. So you have to, question and say, geez, I'm looking at this, is it a motor or a pump? If it was laying on a workbench, it may be hard for you to determine if it's a motor or a pump, unless it was hooked up to something ancillary that gave you that indication. The reason why it's very hard to determine if you're looking at a hydraulic motor sitting on a counter in the parts department, whether it is a motor or a pump, because they share many of the same basic design elements. So a pump and a motor share a lot of the design elements, but there is one major difference. With a hydraulic pump, pumps draw in fluid and force it out, and that converts the mechanical energy into fluid energy. So a pump is sucking in fluid like a well pump, sucking in water and forcing it out. But in contrast, a hydraulic motor has the fluid forced into it, and then it's exhausted out. And that is converting fluid energy back into mechanical energy. So whereas the pump is doing the exact opposite. So to recap this quickly, because if you were in a classroom with me, I'd be able to show you a drawing or a slide for this. A pump draws in fluid and forces it out, and a motor has fluid forced into it, and then it is exhausted out. So that means a hydraulic motor has to have an intake and exhaust, just like an internal combustion engine. And a pump and a motor are often hydraulically connected to create a hydrostatic drive system, like in my tractor. So you need to have a pump, and you need to have a motor. The pump without the motor, or the motor without the pump, is not going to allow any work to be done. So the pump and the motor come together like bacon and eggs. And in the same way that a hydraulic cylinder is referred to as an actuator, lots of times you'll find a hydraulic motor identified as a rotary actuator. So if you're looking in some literature, you're looking in a parts book, you're looking in an exploded view, and you need to get something, lots of times a lot of companies will identify it in the call out. You have an exploded view and they have the numbers, and then you would go to you would go there and say, okay, number 13, and say, that's what I want. And then the pause guy says, okay, that's a rotary actuator. And you say, no, I don't want a rotary actuator. I need a hydraulic motor for my batwing mower. And he said, well, the computer says it's an actuator. Well, that's what lots of times it is referred to as, a rotary actuator. So giving you just a little bit of background here before we get into the meat and potatoes. So what does a hydraulic motor consist of? It consists of a high pressure fluid inlet and an exhaust where the fluid returns back to the pump after the motor has performed the work. So just as an internal combustion engine, as I said, has an intake and exhaust, so does the hydraulic motor. And that's really important as we start to go on later on in the show today and talk about things that could go wrong. So when you're looking at hydraulic motors, there's three basic styles or design categories. They are gear, vane, and piston motor. So those are the three: gear, vane, and piston. You know, and what's gonna determine which one is used is on the work that is required for that motor to perform and the speed necessary. And in addition, it's gonna be the work that's required, the speed that's necessary, the amount of hydraulic pressure that is available from the pump, and the space, the room for packaging. And that's what how the engineer will decide whether to use a gear, vane, or piston motor. And in engineering, we call the room for packaging, we call that the envelope. So depending upon the envelope, the space, and the other things will determine what type of hydraulic motor is going to be employed. And then within those three categories, there's subcategories, right? So just like you could have corn seed, right? You have corn seed, and you could have a non-GMO seed. You could have a traited seed. You could have a BT trait. You could have conventional corn. So within that category, there are three, but not that category. Within those three main categories, there are application-specific types of hydraulic motors, such as internal or external gear motors, axial and variable displacement motors. So that all comes into that same three areas. And then, you know, regardless of the type of motor, whether it's axial, whether it's gear drive, whether it's variable displacement, the whole theory of operation, or the tenet of operation, is based upon the fluid driving the motor. It's still going to be the same. It's still going to hold true. Just like the way a gas, you know, you could have a gasoline engine in a pickup truck or in a car. You could have a gasoline engine in a school bus. You have a gasoline engine on a lawnmower. So they all basically work the same. There's design differences and finesse differences because one may be more complex, more cylinders, but the idea of the individual combustion event, of the spark plug lighting off the mixture and the flame expanding and driving the piston down in a bore, and that converting chemical to mechanical energy. So the way all hydraulic motors work is the same basic tenet, the same basic theory of hydraulics. There's nothing different. It's the just like there's nothing different but the way a Briggs & Stratton ignites gasoline versus a V10 Ford in a big motorhome. I'm using that as an example because that's a pretty big engine. So now, what we need to grasp and understand is that all hydraulic motors have internal and external sealing areas, and that's required so the fluid is directed in the proper path to perform work. Now, if you look at, for instance, an automatic transmission, and if anybody have ever had an automatic transmission apart, there is what's called a valve body. And if you look at some designs of the valve body, they call it the worm track, and that's all these passages that they snake through, and they snake through the transmission, and that is to direct fluid to certain locations. So if you put an automatic transmission in reverse, that is go through the valve body. It's going to direct the fluid to put on the reverse band or clutch or activate the reverse servo, however that transmission is designed. So that is the same thing that's going to happen in a hydraulic motor. They have an internal and external sealing areas so that the fluid is directed in the proper path to perform work. And just like an automatic transmission, in a hydraulic motor, if you have an internal leak, and what an internal leak means is that the fluid is not going where it needs to be directed. So for instance, let's say, arguably, if you have the lever in a certain position, is that the motor will run backwards. And if it's leaking internally, then it's going to send some fluid for the motor to run forward and some fluid for the motor to run backwards. And whichever has the bias, the greater amount of pressure and flow going there, the motor will run, but it will not run at full speed or full torque because it's bleeding off some of the fluid. And, you know, same thing happens with a hydraulic cylinder. cylinder. You could have an internal leak, like on a three-point hitch or on a loader, you could have internal leak. There's no fluid going on the ground externally, but if all of that fluid is not acting against that piston, that actuator, and it's bypassing, then that hydraulic system will not have full power and full performance. So it has an internal leak. So that's something as we move forward today for you to keep in mind. Now, inside the hydraulic motor, because it spins, there's going to be bearings, there's going to be a shaft or shafts, possibly gears and other parts. So if you want to look at it and stop the hydraulic fluid in a hydraulic motor is akin to gasoline in a spark ignition engine or diesel fuel in a compression ignition engine. It is the fuel that runs that motor. Now, due to the nature of having to have the fluid run the motor operated, transfer the energy into the motor so it could do work, is that for all intents and purposes, all hydraulic motors are designed with very tight machining tolerances and internal clearances. You know, as I said a minute ago, if the motor develops an internal leak, then the power output will drop since the fluid is bypassing the working parts. That's very important to understand, and it's also very important to keep in mind with those tight tolerances is that there is very little, very little, I'm trying to think of the word, it cannot tolerate any dirt in that hydraulic oil. So it's so important to keep that hydraulic oil clean and to have a good filter on there so it can filter and catch that dirt before it gets into all of those tight areas and acts as an abrasive and wears it out. So this is, you know, that's probably one of the main reasons for weak hydraulic motor performance, and it's usually that result is usually rooted in poor maintenance. The person neglected the fluid and the filter, along with using poor quality hydraulic fluid and filters, and the end result is that over time that will result in an exponential amount of internal wear of that hydraulic motor, not to mention an exponential amount of wear in the hydraulic pump. So let's stop here for a second and talk briefly about hydraulic fluid. And a lot of places call it tractor fluid. And the thing is that the reality is that there is no true industry standard in agriculture or in construction equipment for hydraulic fluid. There is only a basic standard for its chemical composition. All right, you can't put your Crisco corn oil in there composition, but other than that, the quality of the fluid, its manufacturing process, and its additive package, there is no standard from it. And that's where a lot of people get led astray, is that they think that it's hydraulic fluid is hydraulic fluid. And to a certain extent, it is. All right, it's all going to function. But what is for that piece of equipment to reach its full potential and have its longest life? And guys don't like to hear this. I understand this. They don't want to do it. They want to buy one fluid. They have different brand tractors. They have different colors, different color equipment. They have all, and they want to buy one fluid, and they go buy a generic fluid, and they put it in there. And in some applications, it may work great. In some applications, it may work terribly. In some applications, it may work halfway between great and terrible. But what you are buying is the chemical composition and the additive package that manufacturer wants for that hydraulic system. And, you know, I tell people, you know, you're not buying hydraulic. It's not a consumable like diesel fuel or gasoline. I mean, to a certain extent, it's a consumable. But you're not, if you're going out and you're harvesting corn, unless you've got a leak, you're not filling the combine up with hydraulic fluid, you know, every day as you would with diesel fuel. So just buy the fluid that manufacturer makes and recommends. You're paying a couple of dollars more. It's, and lots of times it's not even really a couple of dollars more. But why why take the chance of having a fluid that has an additive package that is antagonistic? And I like to use the word antagonistic because we're so used to that in agriculture as far as having tank mix partners in the sprayer. I mean, anybody will tell you that, you know, before you put a whole bunch of tank mix partners in your sprayer to do a jar test to see if there's going to be any antagonism. So why would you want to risk having an antagonistic effect in a key piece of equipment? A couple of shows back, I did a show, non-essential, essential machinery equipment, right? You have an essential piece of equipment or even a non-essential piece of equipment, a lawnmower, right? It's essential if the lawn needs to be cut, but it's not going to, you know, be key to you making your farm profitable. Why would you want to take it and to save a couple of, and, you know, and also arguably, you may not even save a nickel. Because a lot of these aftermarket fluids or these no-brand fluids are not that much cheaper than the factory stuff. So if you have John Deere equipment, use John Deere fluid. If you have Case equipment, New Holland equipment, use Case IH fluid. You have a Versatile, use the fluid that they recommend. It is so much simpler than trying to figure out and say, you know, so many people, and you know, the car industry was the same way. It's all the same, you're just paying the dealer, you're paying this and that. Well, I could tell you, talk to anybody that works in the fluids industry, in the petroleum business, about hydraulic fluid, is they're not all the same. And like gasoline, well, you're buying the additive package, and it's so pertinent that you have the proper additive package, because you will wipe a hydraulic pump out, you will wipe a hydraulic motor out. And the other thing that comes into play is that when I say that you wipe it out, I mean, you could deteriorate a seal and then have not an external leak but an internal leak, and this motor is weighed down on performance and power. Or you could have a lubricity problem due to the design of the fluid, right, where it's not compatible with the bearings in there or what have you, or not giving it the lubrication that it needs, and now you start to have excessive wear. You're now pumping. You're pumping those pieces of metal, those microscopic pieces of metal, through the whole system, which is going to act like sand and everything. And then you are going to be pumping that into not only that particular motor that's failing, but through the pump, right, moving it through the pump. So you can say to me, Ray, what, I mean, I got a filter in there, good filter, the filter will catch it. Yes, to a certain extent, the filter will catch it, but it's not going to catch everything. And then if you prematurely start to plug that filter, right, you know, we don't have, for the most part, that, you know, you could have a semi-truck or a big tractor, and it's got a flow gauge on the air filter, on the air inlet, to show you when the filter is getting, when there's a flow restriction. For the most part, we don't have that in a hydraulic system in a tractor. So the thing is that now, let's say that the way your system happens to be designed, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt that I'm all wet, and the filter's catching all the metal, and it's not going through the system. Well, once you start to plug that filter, you are going to starve that hydraulic system. And when you starve that hydraulic system, not only is the performance going to degrade, obviously, right, you're getting less fuel into the motor, but you will cavitate it. And once you cavitate it, now you will accelerate the wear, because you're going to have air introduced into that fluid, and it's going to become a vapor at one particular point. And those air bubbles, we did a show on cavitation, that air bubbles are going to implode, and they're going to deteriorate and eat away all of the metal components, the impeller, the volute, whatever it may be, in that pump. So in that pump or in that hydraulic motor. So it's a no-win situation by having an abrasive type of material going through any hydraulic system. And, you know, as I was saying, is that it's a bacon and eggs approach, that it's one with the other. So don't ever lose sight that the motor can only work as well as the pump. If the pump is weak, then so will the output of the motor. So many times, you know, we jump to the end of the, you know, the last thing, right? I mean, so the motor must be no good, right? And then But it is important to have the proper pressure and flow going to that motor for it to perform, and that is coming from the pump. So for this reason, the proper way to diagnose any hydraulic motor issue is with the shop manual, and you need to use a pressure and flow gauge, and you really need a pressure and flow gauge that also looks at fluid temperature and that you could hook in series so it goes in line. And you need to look at pressure and flow, because any hydraulic system, it is a relationship of pressure and flow. And that's so you need to start at the pump and see if you are giving the motor, the hydraulic motor, the pressure and flow that the specifications call for. But I'll talk a little bit more about that before I close. So now we have the fluid circuits, and the fluid circuits are internal to the pump. So as I said, that's like the worm track, the valve body, and an automatic transmission. So the industry as a whole identifies hydraulic motors depending upon the work it's going to do, so whatever it's assigned to do. The qualifier, the metric that they use, is it's either going to be a traction drive or a non-traction drive. So basically, a traction drive system would be on my little John Deere D110, right, or your combine that's actually moving the piece of equipment. If you have a large mower, batwing mower, and the motor is running the blades for the mower decks, for each mower deck, then that is a non-traction drive. You know, on occasion, because you know nothing is clear cut today, there's always some sort of gray area. On occasion, you may see the term propel drive instead for a motor that moves a machine. So it may be a propel drive, but the industry standard usually is traction drive. A non-traction drive, you may sometimes called a work drive, or is qualified as a motor operating an auger, conveyor, or something else. So it could be a work drive, but it's a work drive, a traction drive, but the most common terms are traction drive and non-traction drive. And you know, that's important today because, like I said, you go to the parts department, you look something up, or a lot of guys buy parts online now, and you may see, what the heck they're talking about? You know, it's a work drive motor. What the heck is a work drive motor? So they're, you know, beating us to death with semantics. Now, a rotary drive system can be classified as either an open or closed loop. With an open loop design, the hydraulic fluid is returned to a reservoir before going back to the motor. When it exhausts from the motor, it goes to a reservoir. The motor and the pump circuit are open to atmosphere. The drive speed, the speed of the motor, is then controlled by varying the flow with the valve, changing the pump input speed, or by the use of a variable displacement pump. So on an open circuit system, that the drive speed of the motor is going to be the control with a flow valve, the limiting flow, so it's going to go faster or slower. If we limit flow slower and more flow, it's going to be faster. Changing the pump input speed, so that's at the pump, not at the motor, all right, or by use of a variable displacement pump. So where will you find this type of hydraulic motor, rotary drive with an open design? It's commonly, you'll find open circuits that are truck mounted booms, winches, conveyors, and things like that. So really not so much in agriculture, but you could have a boom truck. You could have bought a boom truck and you have a hydraulic winch or a hydraulic boom. And I know a lot of guys for the farm shop or for service trucks buy a boom truck. Well, let's say you're coming, the guy is coming to fix a flat tire on your combine or on a truck. He's going to have a boom. And if that is a hydraulically operated boom, which most instances it would be, it's going to have that type of system. Most, if not all, machine drive systems are considered closed loop circuits. So something that's going to drive your combine forward is historically a closed loop circuit. And with that type of system, there is no reservoir between the inlet and the outlet of the pump and the motor. the pump output, the output of the pump, right, goes to, so the pressure goes directly to the motor inlet, and the motor outlet, which was also was identified as the exhaust of the motor after it did the work, is connected directly to the pump inlet. So the output of the pump goes directly to the motor inlet, and the exhaust of the pump, exhaust of the motor goes directly to the pump inlet. So think of a water pump on a car. That's basically how a water pump on a car works. The motor speed is typically, and I'm saying typically because you could find some other ways, is typically controlled by using a variable displacement pump. When a closed loop system inherently tend to lose hydraulic pressure over time. And for this reason, the vehicle is equipped with some type of mechanical parking brake, since the hydraulic motor will bleed pressure to the exhaust that cannot be relied on to hold the machine. So if you have that type of drive system, historically there'll be some kind of mechanical type of parking brake, because if you were to leave that system and shut it off, it's going to lose some pressure. It's going to start to equalize and would not hold that machine in place and stationary. So that is why you will have some sort of parking brake or emergency brake, whatever you want to call it. All right. So that's a closed loop system, mostly used for drive, and it will. So the output of the pump is going directly to the motor, and then the exhaust of the motor is going directly back of to the inlet of the pump. Think about a water pump on a engine. So, you know, no matter what you do in life, if you're a farmer and you want to get the most yield from I raise corn, so I always default to corn. You want to get the most yield from your corn, you have to learn to think like a corn plant. If you're a dairyman and you want to get the most milk from your cow, you have to learn to think like a cow. And if you're building drag racers, you have to think like that engine. And you have to think like that engine, and you have to anticipate what it's going to like and what it's not going to like. So though hydraulic motors are generally very, very trouble-free, we like to say that hydraulic motors don't die, they're murdered. All right, they're murdered by a lack of maintenance. Not that they can never wear out, but they're traditionally murdered from a lack of poor service, wrong fluid, filters that are inferior, what have you. So since the shaft rides in a bearing, and it's usually either a roller or a tapered bearing, depending upon the application, the condition of the bearing will determine not only the torque output of the motor, but its impact on seal life. In many applications, the bearings are meant to be greased using the manufacturer's recommended lubricant. So if you look at your hydraulic motors, there may be a bearing in there that is not going to be used the hydraulic fluid as a lubricant. They're only using the hydraulic fluid as what we call a working fluid. So if you have a brake system in a car, right, hydraulic brake system, the hydraulic fluid is a working fluid. It does the work. You step on the pedal, the master cylinder builds pressure, sends that pressure and flow out into the lines, and either moves the caliper or brakes you. So that's considered a working fluid. And in some applications, you will find that the bearing that the shaft that the hydraulic motor is running off of will need to be lubricated. And then again, we're not going to use a generic grease. So this is a good enough grease for everything, one size fits all. We're going to use a grease that's going to meet that manufacturer's specifications. Because if you wipe out that, you could be the best guy in the world with fluid maintenance. If you put the wrong type of grease and it breaks down in that bearing and doesn't provide lubrication, you're still buying a motor, regardless, right? So that's something that I want to make sure that you are very, very aware of and choose to hopefully honor. So if this is not done, right, if you don't maintain that bearing, then over time what's going to happen is that there's going to be the internal friction inside the engine will increase, the hydraulic motor will increase, and that is called a parasitic loss. So the fluid power will be used to drive the motor instead of performing work. So in essence, that would be like driving a car with the parking brake on or the brake hung up. You are basically having, instead of using that power to move the vehicle and maintain a speed, you have to give the car more throttle, the engine more throttle, right, because the parking brake is dragging. So, and that is called a parasitic loss within the hydraulic motor. So if you don't grease maintain that bearing, is that hydraulic motor is not only going to run hotter and have an excessive amount of wear, but it's going to have less output. Its horsepower output is going to be less because it's using a portion of its working fluid's energy just to turn the motor because it has a non-greased bearing. So, you know, the thing basically, none of this is complicated. You know, just perform basic maintenance on it, and that will that's not only going to dramatically extend the life of the motor, but it's going to make it more efficient in operation. It's going to run cooler. It's not going to beat up the pump. It's not going to beat up the system, and you're going to get the most work out of that motor and keep it in service for as long as possible. So the other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, often when any bearing like that goes bad, and you're running the motor, because lots of times you can't even hear these motors, right? You can't even hear them. I mean, you know, you can't feel them, you can't hear them. They're underneath the machine, they're underneath the combine, the sprayer, what have you. All right. And once you start to hear it, it's pretty bad, right? Once that bearing starts to go bad, it often has the end result of the shaft getting scored, and then the entire unit needs to be replaced. So in essence, you know, for a little bit of grease, you could save yourself a lot of aggravation, expense, and money. And like anything in life, Murphy's Law, these things tend to fail at the most inopportune time, right? You want to get out there and put a fungicide application or a foliar feeding application on your beans, and the hydraulic motor takes a dump. All right, so I mean, it's so simplistic. It's like the dentist telling you, look, brush your teeth. You know, brush your teeth. Don't eat a lot of candy. Brush your teeth, and a little bit of basic hygiene, and the teeth will last you the part of your life. And then same thing with a hydraulic motor. So now, the other thing that I want you to do is go around, and this is a good winter project, is go around, identify your hydraulic motors, and keep the bolts that hold the motor together tight, and keep those along with those that for the inlet and the exhaust fittings. And that should be all part of your preventive maintenance. Get a wrench, put a wrench on it. You're not going to come with an impact gun and try to tighten it. Put a wrench on it. See it that the motors, the bolts that hold the motor, just like with a carburetor. You want to make sure the bolts holding a carburetor together and the carburetor to the intake manifold are snug and tight. You know, and you know, since you know the hydraulic motor, I'm repeating this again, its companion is the hydraulic pump. And they both live and die by the chemical composition of the fluid. So it's so important that you just service the filter and change the fluid on a scheduled basis and use the proper filter and the proper fluid. Because remember, you want to not only catch, you know, people talk about filters and they talk about the microns in the filter, and I don't care whether it's an oil filter, hydraulic filter, air filter, but the microns, how small a particle will catch. But that's obviously very, very important. But also, you have to be concerned with what they call the delta P, the change in pressure across that filter. So it's just like if you have a bad ground, a high impedance ground, is that you have a large voltage drop. You have a lot of electrons waiting to go to ground. The traffic is backed up. If you have a filter, it could have the proper microns right, but if the filter element is not efficient, you're going to have a large pressure differential. So the pressure going in versus the pressure going out is going to be a large drop. It's not going to be the same. So the thing is that that's going to impact your hydraulic motor performance, and it's so important, as I said, because you're going to evoke cavitation, and cavitation is sure death. And a lot of hydraulic motors and pumps have been ruined and destroyed simply because the guy wanted to spend 10 cents, $5 less on a filter that he changes once a year. All right? So the thing is that what I want you to do is, or what I do, is I like to look at a hydraulic motor no differently than an internal combustion engine. I perform a scheduled maintenance. I like to do a yearly, depending upon how much use it gets. And my operation is a small operation, so a year is more than sufficient. I like to perform a yearly analysis of the in-service fluid. Take a sample, send it to an analysis lab. And it's no different than you would be doing for engine oil on a diesel or a gasoline engine. Remember, so the fluid is the working fluid inside a hydraulic system. In addition, what I like to do is invest in a filter cutting tool. A company called Goodson makes a very nice filter cutting tool, and it almost looks like a pipe cutter. And you put it in the filter, and you spin it around. They're about $50, $60. I have theirs. It's made in USA. It's a beautiful tool. It's made great. It has changeable. When a blade wears out, the cutting blade's like a can opener. You could change it. All right. You want to make a habit, whenever you change a filter, to cutting it apart. And you know, people say, I use a hacksaw. And if you want to do that, that's fine, or a sawzall. But that usually imparts some metal into it. But if you want to do it that way, that's fine. You can identify the metal that you put in there by cutting it, and you know, that's not an issue. Whatever works for you. But those tools are so easy, they're so safe to work with, and you just spin it around and it cuts through the filter. So, but what I like to do is cut the filter apart and check the media inside and look for some telltale signs of something going wrong. So, and then you could also reference the owner's manual, the shop manual for that piece of equipment, and make sure, once again, I'm coming back to it, that you're using the right filter and the right fluid with the right additive package. So these simple things will make a world of difference in the life of a hydraulic motor and a hydraulic system. In theory, if you took care of that hydraulic motor and that hydraulic system, that should outlast that piece of equipment, or nearly outlast that internal combustion engine. So, you know, a properly cared for hydraulic motor, the industry, let me break away for a minute. The industry sets performance standards. And everybody who's in engineering has some sort of performance standard. And whether it's an industry standard or just a common standard within the industry, or it's an SAE, which is Society of Automotive Engineers, which agricultural engineers fall under that same banner of SAE. And the industry estimates that the bearing life of an external gear motor to be between 2,000 and 5,000 hours at full load, all right? And then when it comes to an axial piston hydraulic motor, their design, the industry expects it to last 15,000 hours under full load. So you're looking at between 2,000 or 2 to 5,000 on an external gear drive motor, and an axial motor, 15,000 hours under full load. Now keep in mind that, let's say, take that 5,000 hour figure, that's under full load. If you're only running under part load, that figure may go up to 17,000 hours, and the 15,000 hour figure under full load may go up to 40,000 hours, because it's not running under full load for every one of the hours that machine is operating. So if you use this, you know, as a goal, as a standard to go by, right, the thing is that you should be a complete stranger to all of the hydraulic motors on your equipment other than tightening the fittings and tightening the bolts. All right, you should be a complete stranger. You shouldn't know how they come apart, how to get them off, how to do anything, because you should at 15,000 hours under full load. So you may say, well, I run my tractors 15,000 hours. Yeah, but they're usually not under full load. So as I said a minute ago, you could extend that 15,000 hours to maybe 30,000 hours, whatever. So I'm telling you that because it's a standard for you to go by. If you're not getting that type of life, and you know, there's always going to be, I mean, like we used to say in the car business, babies die, sadly. You may have an anomaly where something happens, but historically, the hydraulic motor, right, can outlast that piece of equipment or outlast that internal combustion engine with minimal amount of maintenance and care by just giving it a little bit of TLC, by changing the filters, they're using the right fluid, all right, the right filter, and making sure everything is snug, and if it has a bearing, grease that bearing, all right? So it's, you know, and that's what, and I repeat this time and time again, you know, if you look, I spoke about that excellent video, 30 harvests, all right? And it shows about the struggles in agriculture today. You know, there's struggles in every business. And, you know, I mean, my heart bleeds for agriculture. But there's struggles in every business. But the most important thing is for you to be able to make your equipment last as long as possible. That doesn't mean that you spend no money. That means you spend your money to make it last, because it's a lot less expensive to keep something maintained than to buy a new one or to fix it. And so many people, that part of farmers and the people in town, there's a certain amount of farmers that think no differently than the people in town. Sorry, all right? You know, they run stuff into the ground. They take a hydraulic hose off. They don't put the cap on the ports. They don't wipe off the system before they put the line back in. They buy the cheapest fluid. They do all, and they cry like a stuck pig when everything blows up on them. You know, and sadly, when any business, when the margins are tight, you cannot absorb that loss. And if that loss, even if it's not a financial catastrophe to fix that or replace it, in agriculture, and I beat this drum almost every week, is that you are going and you are taking that piece of equipment out of service, and you know, during planting season, possibly in the most inopportune time, and every industry or every university, everything that you see tells you that once you miss that optimum planting window, in almost every instance, you're kissing yield goodbye. And I say this so many times, I sound like a broken record. I look at farm equipment as a emergency vehicle, and it needs to roll when it rolls, when it has to roll. And by simple things, do a fluid analysis on your hydraulic system, all right? If it has a greasable bearing, grease it with the proper grease, all right? Keep the fitting snug and tight. If there's a connection like a three-point hitch or an implement, make sure that you plug those connections when they're not in use, the lines aren't open. Wipe the dirt off of them. Any leaky lines, fix before it becomes a problem. And as I said, these systems, this is not me saying it, all right, that's industry standard. I mean, these systems will last 15, 20, 30,000 hours with no problems whatsoever. But they are very, very unforgiving if they have dirt in them, they have moisture in them, they are low on fluid, or the wrong fluid with the wrong chemical composition, all right, their prima donnas that way. You keep them, you give them what they want, and they will give you what you need. And it is a long service life with no repairs and just some maintenance, and you farming, or you cleaning cattle pens, or you cleaning a dairy barn, whatever you're doing, you're back to you're doing your business. Let the hydraulic motor do its is. Give it a little bit of a pat and a kiss, and it's going to love you forever, all right? Nothing more than that. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to contact me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. Now we're gonna get ready to close and go to our special delivery, and that is brought to you by Firestone Ag. That is a company founded by Harvey Firestone, a fourth generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. Harvey dreamed of putting rubber tires on farm tractors, and his innovative mindset is the core of Firestone Ag today, and lives on with their 23 degree tread bar and AD2 technology. The soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone. So as I said, I got a couple of letters in, and the people were finding diesel fuel in their engine oil, and any type of fuel in gasoline or diesel in lubricating oil is a no-no, because it destroys the lubricity of that oil, and it creates excessive wear inside the engine. As I've said on the show before, and I'm repeating it, the best way for you to find that is to do a visual inspection. Most of the time, it's either leaking through the injector, or some engines have a return pipe, depending whether it's a common rail or a pump line nozzle, what have you. But in essence, the fuel has to be leaking only from a source where fuel can be introduced to the oil. All right. In an older system, it could actually be at the injection pump. All right. Or it could be at a return line going through the head, or it could be actually at the injector or cup seal or what have you. But regardless, I'm not going to go down a litany of different things here. The only way for you to accurately tell what's going on is to do a dye and black light test. That is it. You do a dye and black light test, and you put a dye in the fuel, and then you run the engine. May require you to take the rocker cover off, what have you, and you go with a black light, and it gives you a set of goggles, and the black light, wherever the fuel is leaking into the oil, will glow in the black light, and you will very easily be able to see it. So, you know, I've said this before, you could buy a basic kit for under $100. You buy the light, then they give you a bottle of the dye, and then at that particular point, all you have to do is replace the dye for subsequent light tests. And that is the only way for you to do it. You dye the fuel, you use the black light, and then that's going to save you a lot of aggravation. And, you know, if you pull a rocker off and it's running, and you see the iridescent light showing, you know, that it's coming through from the cylinder head, and that engine has a return line and it goes through the cylinder head, then that is where your problem is. It's easier for me said than done, but other than that, you're completely guessing. It's like going to a doctor and saying, I don't feel good. Well, let's do surgery. Let's give you chemotherapy. Let's do this. Let's do that. And people contact me and they want a magic pill, and I feel sorry for them, because this is not a good situation, and it's usually an expensive situation, and historically it has done some damage or a good deal of damage before they realize that this engine is making oil, because the oil level keeps going up on the dipstick. And they're looking for a simple answer, and there is no simple answer. The test itself is simplistic. Sometimes it's hard, or a little bit more difficult, or burdensome is probably a better word, to actually institute. But that is it. Black light kit, look them up. The better auto parts stores have them. A lot of farm tractor dealers sell them. Get them on the internet, all different places. You want to get a fuel dye kit with a black light. And a lot of companies also use the same black light, and they have different dyes, so you could put it in the engine oil looking for a oil leak. You could put it in, they have a different one for an air conditioner system looking for a refrigerant leak. So you could put in a hydraulic system looking for a leak. So the thing basically is, it's the same black light, just a different dye. So that is the only way that you could diagnose it. There's no magic pill that you wave a magic wand over it and you can tell where the fuel is leaking into the oil. Alrighty, so listen, thank you so much for listening. I wish everyone a blessed week, and I hope that you enjoyed the show today. I enjoyed delivering it to you, and as always, I want you to know that the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and my beloved America. You have a great week, and be safe.